Welcome to the Gamesmith's Table Talk. This is a roundtable format discussion where I and my guests try to cover three tabletop role-playing related topics in 15 minutes. If you know anything about tabletop role players, then you'll know that this is an ambitious goal. Let's head to the table. Welcome back to our Table Talk podcast. I'm your host, Clayton the Gamesmith, and joining me are...
I'm Franklin.
I'm Cheryl.
I'm Clark.
Let's head to the table.
The views and opinions of the panel are their own and do not reflect the views and opinions of any other individual company or organization. This podcast has been known to be opinionated. You have been warned.
Continuing with our discussion on gestalting, Franklin had mentioned of a few issues that GMs might run into, and I just wanted to expand on a few of those. There seems to be a very, what I consider to be an unfair conception of what gestalting is. There are a lot of boards, discussion boards, forums, things like that, that talk about how gestalting encourages the wrong kind of gameplay.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I'd like to know what the quote-unquote wrong kind of gameplay is. It's the gameplay is what you and your players enjoy. Isn't that the right kind of gameplay?
As far as I know.
They talk about how it caters to the wrong type of player. It refers to the power gamer. The person who has to have the best of everything, has to have the plus five of everything, and has got all of their, they're a min-maxer. All of their stats are maxed out to whatever they can possibly be, as quickly as they possibly can be, and they are not considering story, is the general conception.
I can see where that conception, or perception, comes in, because you're taking two classes and you're using all of their abilities without any distraction or disadvantage to it. However, even though you've gotten the abilities of two classes, you're still working with the same action economy.
Yes.
I think that's absolutely a valid point. And the argument I've heard for gestalting not being too overpowered, which I don't necessarily agree with, but just putting it out here, is that a character who has two classes or three classes, or however many set of abilities, still only gets one standard action, one move action, one swift per turn. That is true. The power level from gestalting comes from the fact that a fighter has these bonuses they get to add to attack, and for example, a rogue gets all their sneak attack. The rogue is balanced out by having a lower base attack bonus, usually having a lower strength score, not having access to as many combat feats. The gestalted character gets the best of both worlds, so you have a fighter that has the same full sneak attack that a rogue does, for example, and that's where the extra power comes from. Like I said at the end of the last episode, it's not the same as being two characters. The power level doesn't quite work out that way. But they certainly are stronger than one single-classed character.
Yeah, so definitely if you are planning to use gestalting at the table, the GM has to be aware that he's going to have to change how he's setting up encounters, definitely. Otherwise, if you go from single-class to gestalting and then don't change what you're looking at encounter-wise, your PCs are going to have a far easier time.
Okay, because I can't help myself, I need to point out that your Magus Swashbuckler didn't make any difference that, you know, he was gestalted when he died the last time.
The dice gods will do what they may.
Yes.
That is true.
And I did walk into that build knowing it wasn't going to be viable until third level.
But what I'm saying is that with all of the extra choices, you still only have the best die, not added together. Still only the best die. I make the argument that for gestalting, you have the better choices available to you, but those choices are unrealized because of the action economy. Whether I choose to swing a sword or cast a spell makes no difference until I take my action. But as soon as I take one, it precludes me from the other. How is that any different than a person who only gets to choose one? How does that make me, quote-unquote, more powerful?
It does in the sense if you take a full BAB character and put it with a half or three quarter BAB, you do become a full BAB character, whereas with the single one you would not be. There is that little power spike, and I air quoted that because it is a little power spike.
Okay,
Once again,
I'll agree with that.
Easily mitigated by what your GM throws at you.
Yeah. GM creating gestalted villains, for example, is a good check on a gestalted player's power.
Absolutely.
I do want to toss out as well, since we're talking about the action economy, there are plenty of classes that have power that isn't gated behind the action economy. Rogue sneak attack, fighter, you know, if you're a fighter, full bat character's power attack. I guess Paladin's Smite Evil is a swift, so that doesn't really count. But the monk's AC bonus, they're scaling an armed strike die. None of those things are based on the action economy. They're passive effects. Gain all of the passive abilities of the classes that you have.
In a way.
Okay. But, yes, that is very true.
But when you are gestalted, and I think this is something that Clark wanted to talk about, you have more choices to use in that action economy.
Definitely, yeah. I find it opens up a lot of opportunities to when your character, when you're creating a concept and you're building your gestalt character, it really forces you to make smarter choices. Not necessarily more powerful choices game-wise, but it forces you to really think about your action economy and how those two classes are going to synergize together to do what you want them to do. Like was mentioned, two classes might both depend on a standard action for their main attacks, but learning how to combine two characters that actually complement each other is a lot of the fun in building these characters as well.
Yeah, I can agree with that totally. With my wizard ranger, for instance, my concept was that the wizard portion of my character helps highlight the archer. It makes him a better archer. So when I'm going into a combat, I have to be aware of which spells I'm using for my wizard portion to buff my archery portion.
Okay.
I think one other point to mention as well is that when you're talking about balance and what makes a character more or less powerful, you have to acknowledge that versatility does correlate to strength. A character who, for example, only has a melee attack is going to be weaker than a character who has a melee attack, a ranged attack, and spells. Even if they can only use one at a time, the versatility is worth an amount of power.
Versatility always, always makes you more powerful.
Okay, but if I'm single-classed, I have all my feats and everything dedicated towards the promotion of that one. Now that if I'm playing two classes, I am trying to fulfill two roles. Because I have that versatility, I'm actually splitting my feats.
It can be. It depends on how you, as we said in the first episode, how you go about creating your character. The concept that you have for your character.
How you go about synergizing the classes that you've chosen.
I think you have to think more about your character.
Definitely.
And what you see as who they are when you're gestalting.
Now, are you, when you say who they are, you're meaning mechanically, not role-playing?
It could be both. For instance, I'll go back to my ranger wizard. I can do a lot of powerful things with the wizard, but if I'm going with who he is in a role-play setting, the spells that he's learning are mostly towards how does this make me a better archer? How does this make me a better ranger? Rather than, you know, oh, hey, I need, you know, lightning bolt and fireball and all this. I think we're 7th level, and I think I have one mass area spell, which is the fireball.
And at the risk of broaching into a topic that we're not going to be covering at this exact moment, but we'll probably cover in later episodes, I think the line between mechanics and roleplay isn't as cut and dry as a lot of people think. I don't think they don't exist in vacuum separate from each other. The mechanics of your character, the spells they can cast, the feats that they have, represent their history, their abilities, and even just the mechanics of, you know, how an individual spell works helps create a specific feel for that character. Personally, when I make characters, I make a point to choose spells that highlight facets of their personality, for example. We had a, unfortunately now deceased, but spectacularly deceased, gunslinger wizard, who had a very short-range, explosive style of spellcasting, and that served to highlight his personality.
Very much so.
Definitely.
He definitely went out with a bang.
But that is definitely...
That's a topic for another time.
Yeah, yeah, that's totally a different thing.
So, I mean, we have covered why people think gestalting is not really a good idea. And it really comes down to your play style, what you want to accomplish at the table. For instance, the reason we use gestalting is because when we do adventure paths, 6 months to a year is our average on an adventure path. And that's every week, sometimes twice a week. So if we're only playing one character, there's a lot of character classes out there that we do not even touch. So being able to play two is phenomenal.
That's definitely been a highlight for me as well. As a role player that mostly focused on paladins and rogues and Gestalting's allowed me to try out different character classes that I normally wouldn't go to first. It's allowed me to learn more of the game mechanics, learn more of different specialties that make each class special.
Well, I think that in terms of, I wanted to kind of circle back around to, does anybody feel as though that the Gestalt is the victim of the min-max criticism?
No, I don't.
I don't think so either. Min-maxing is something that's going to come down to your players, but I think it's worth differentiating as well, because I think there's a little bit of confusion. People use the term min-max. I think there's a couple of different things people might mean. I would differentiate between min-maxing, trying to squeeze the most power possible out of the established rule set, and there's the power fantasy, which is deliberately playing a high-powered character. And I think they're similar, but not quite the same thing. Technically speaking, you can't really min-max. Like, you can min-max a gestalted character, but it's not the same as, you can't really compare that character to core, because you're deliberately playing with a higher powered rule set, in the same way that you wouldn't compare the power level of a 25 point build character to, say, a 45 or even a 60 point build character. One of those is min-maxing. Trying to squeeze the most juice you possibly can out of your 25 points is min-maxing. Just saying, all right, we're going to play 60 points is a separate thing. That's the power fantasy. We want to play a high tier, you know, godly campaign. And I think gestalting, I think when people talk about the issues of min-maxing, gestalting, I think what they really mean is the power fantasy. And it means that I think they're saying they want to play lower scale, lower powered characters. And there's absolutely compelling stories to be had there. To take the obvious example, Sam and Frodo in Lord of the Rings are low powered characters having a very real, very human story, and there's a place for that, and there's a place for being, you know, to show my age, for example, Alucard from Helsing, who is a very, very powerful character. Both of those characters are interesting and compelling for entirely different reasons, and gestalting will definitely push you more towards the power fantasy side of that.
In my experience, I never really felt it was a power gaming thing, because a lot of my character creation was really focusing on the resources I have to build up each class's weaknesses. You still only have so many skill points or so many feats to support your character, and by having two classes, there's twice the need for those resources, so it really does balance out.
My only guilty pleasure in gestalting that I would regard as a quote-unquote power gaming thing is when I deliberately take two classes that I specifically synergize, like we talked about in our previous episode, where if I have a wizard and a fighter, I can take the feats from the fighter and totally dump them into the wizard, or vice versa, in order to make that one class better.
Yes.
That I could easily regard that as power gaming.
Now, I mean, on the other side, we've had players at our table who have gestalted and only taken one specific aspect from the second character. For instance, the druid fighter that we had took only
yes.
The animal companion. She did absolutely no spell casting. She just liked the fact that she had a pet.
Right.
Which was why she took druid as her second class in the gestalt, which is perfectly fine. I mean, there are people that do that. They say, you know, I really enjoy this aspect of this class, so that's going to be the second part of my gestalt, but I'm really heavily focused on the first class. I'm just taking that one little spot over there.
You'll never guess what happened. We've run out of time.
What?
In our
Maybe we should rethink this format.
We did not get to three topics. I guess we'll see what happens next episode.
Have we finished talking about gestalting?
I guess we'll have to tune in to the next episode to find out.